Okay, let's unpack this. If you own raw, undeveloped land, a piece of forest, some pasture, maybe a secluded tract of acreage, you're holding a tangible asset, but you're also holding this huge, invisible liability risk. We've been through the documents you shared, and it's really clear there's a lot of confusion out there about how to ensure this specific kind of asset.
It's the classic alphabet soup problem. You hear all these terms thrown around:
Right?
vacant land insurance, hunting lease insurance, maybe someone mentions an umbrella policy. And because the names, they sound sort of similar, people often think they need to be involved in the riskiest activity hunting just to get the basic coverage they need.
And that's our mission for this deep dive. We want to cut through that fog. We're going to establish the foundational difference between insuring, say, passive land ownership and insuring active, even commercial, land use.
Such a critical distinction.
Now, the core question we really need to settle for you right now is this: is allowing hunting necessary to purchase that crucial vacant land coverage?
And the simple, direct answer is an immediate no. Absolutely not. You do not have to allow hunting.
Okay.
But the reasons why that's true and how your policy protects you regardless of who is walking on your land, well, that's what's absolutely critical to understand. The whole difference between these policies really just boils down to two things: compensation and risk profile.
Right, so let's start with that base layer then. Vacant land insurance, or VLI. What exactly defines the land that this policy is built to cover?
VLI is essentially a general liability shield. Think of it that way. It's specifically designed for property that is, raw, unimproved,
So no buildings.
right, and
Yeah.
not actively used as a residence.
Yeah.
The insurer is basically assuming a very low passive risk profile. Its entire purpose is to protect you, the landowner, if someone gets injured or if some kind of property damage starts on that piece of ground.
And this is where it gets surprisingly strict from what I've read. We tend to think of vacant land as just land without a house on it. But the definition of no structures that many insurers use is way more restrictive than that. What counts as a structure that could actually void a typical VLI policy?
This is a huge one. We've seen this cause massive headaches for landowners because while a small hunting blind or maybe a temporary feeder might get overlooked, anything that implies permanence or high usage can void the coverage instantly.
Why is that?
Well, insurers see structures as magnets for risk. They have to be maintained, they can fail, and they signal an invitation for more people to be on the property more often.
So it's not just a house or a big garage that's a problem. The documents we looked at gave some really surprising examples.
They did. I mean, we're talking about basic parts of just managing rural land. Fences, for
A
instance.
fence, just a regular fence.
A large permanent boundary fence, yeah, that can be an exclusion. Other things, too, like power or water utility components, a permanent bridge you built over a creek, or even a boat dock. Even an old, seldom used shed can disqualify a property from standard VLI.
Wait a minute, though. That sounds like the insurer is penalizing a landowner for taking basic, responsible steps. If I put up a barbed wire fence to clearly mark my boundaries, I might accidentally be voiding the very liability protection I need for when someone tries to climb over that fence.
That's the
Is
trap.
there no, I don't know, common sense exception written into these policies?
That rigidity is exactly why so many landowners get stuck. If you're using a generalized carrier, the rules are often really inflexible, and this is where specialized programs become absolutely essential.
Ah, right. The exception we found in the research.
Precisely. There are specific organizations, like certain land use associations, that have recognized this hurdle. They offer these bespoke programs that do include coverage for structures like old, dilapidated barns or, a very seldom used storage cabin.
So it's not just about the structure, it's about who is underwriting the risk.
Exactly. The key isn't just the structure itself, but the type of entity. If the insurer specializes in rural land, they get it. They understand that a 100-year-old falling down shed is a totally different risk than a brand new garage.
That distinction, a specialized versus a generalized insurer, that's huge.
Yeah.
That offers a real solution for the landowner who wants protection, but also has land with, these minor existing structures.
Absolutely. So now let's talk about what VLI actually shields you from, because understanding the liability here is what makes this insurance feel mandatory. VLI protects against two major risk areas. Let's start with the biggest source of claims: bodily injury.
Yeah, liability coverage for bodily injury is so important because just owning the land carries this inherent responsibility, even if you never intend for anyone to set foot on it. And this is where that confusion with hunting often comes in.
It does. People see hunting and think that's the only risk. But VLI covers claims from bodily injury during a huge range of recreational uses. Yes, it covers hunting injuries, but also injuries from fishing, riding an ATV, camping, swimming, hiking, even just walking across a field and tripping in a hole.
So the policy doesn't care what the person was doing.
It doesn't care what activity caused the fall or the injury. It defends you against the lawsuit that comes after.
And crucially, this protection covers people you invited onto land and people you didn't invite, trespassers. This gets into some really complex premises liability law, which changes from place to place, but the policy is designed to provide a defense against all of them.
Exactly. And for the curious landowner listening, we have to mention something called the attractive nuisance doctrine.
Oh, this one is terrifying.
It really is. It's a specific, terrifying realization for anyone who owns vacant land. If you have, say, an old abandoned tractor, a partially collapsed shed, or maybe an unmarked well cap, something dangerous that might attract children, you can be held liable even if they were technically trespassing.
That makes the coverage absolutely essential. That well cap example we saw in the sources is perfect. A hiker, invited or not, trips over an old well cap hidden by weeds and has a serious fall.
Yep.
That is a direct, incredibly costly liability for you, the landowner. And VLI is the only thing standing between that lawsuit and your personal assets.
VLI is your foundational passive shield. And we can't forget the second critical function covering damage that starts on your property but spreads to a neighbor's.
Right. The campfire example. Someone you invited out starts a campfire, and that fire, because of a sudden gust of wind or just negligence, spreads off your 10 acres and onto the next property.
Your VLI policy can step in to cover that loss and all the legal defense costs that come with it. It mitigates claims against you from things like fire, but also erosion or water runoff.
Okay, so to sum up this first part, VLI is the general foundational safety net for raw land. It protects you from claims of bodily injury or property damage caused by guests, invited or not, that comes from just passive recreational use.
Perfect summary.
So if VLI is the passive shield, what happens when we shift into active, maybe even commercial use? This is where hunting lease insurance, or HLI, becomes mandatory. And this is where that crucial element of compensation comes in.
This transition is the absolute key to understanding the whole landscape. A hunting lease is a clear transactional arrangement.
It's a business deal?
It's a business deal. The landowner grants a hunter or a group of hunters exclusive access for hunting over a set period of time, and in return, the landowner gets a mutually agreed-upon price.
And that compensation, that money changing hands, is the financial trigger that completely changes the risk profile. It shifts your liability from being a passive owner to being someone engaged in a commercial enterprise, even if it's for a pretty small amount of money.
And we have to dig into the nuance of compensation. It doesn't have to be cash.
Oh, good point.
If the hunt club agrees to pay you by, say, building new access roads or repairing old fences or doing other significant land improvements in exchange for access, that still counts as compensation in the eyes of many insurers. It's a non-monetary financial transaction.
That's a powerful point. It's not just the cash,
yeah.
It's the exchange of value. The source material really emphasizes that a quality lease arrangement, especially when compensation's involved, has to have two specific protective parts.
Absolutely critical. First, you need a highly detailed signed lease agreement. And I don't mean a handshake or a simple one-page note. It has to meticulously list expectations. What species can be hunted? Are ATVs allowed and where? What's the max number of people allowed on the property at one time? And crucially, the specific payment terms.
So the agreement manages the risk, but the second component is what provides the actual financial defense, the hunting lease liability insurance policy itself.
Why is HLI so non-negotiable when hunting is involved?
Because hunting is an inherently dangerous activity. I mean, it involves high-risk variables that just don't exist with passive hiking, of course.
You're dealing with people hanging heavy tree stands 20 feet up in a tree, riding rugged terrain on powerful vehicles, and most obviously, using firearms. These activities just drastically escalate the liability risk.
And the beauty of HLI, as the documents laid out, is that it covers liability claims from someone else who is on the lease. It protects the hunters from each other.
Yes, it creates this critical liability bubble around the group that's doing the dangerous activity.
So the hunters are insured, But how does that help the landowner?
Well, HLI is designed to cover the leaseholders as well as the landowner. So if one member of the hunting party accidentally causes an injury to another member, the policy steps in. This is so vital because if the hunters didn't have this coverage, you can bet the injured person's lawyer would try to pull the landowner into the lawsuit, arguing they failed to maintain a safe premise. HLI insulates the landowner from that exposure.
Okay, so we have two very, very different risk calculations going on here. Let's just pause and explicitly contrast the policies one last time. Make sure the distinction between passive risk and compensated risk is crystal clear for everyone.
Okay, good idea. If you need to quickly internalize the difference, just remember this. VLI is for passive, non-compensated ownership. It covers the landowner of property with no permanent residences who allows access for no charge or compensation. It's your personal financial defense against unexpected accidents on the land you happen to own.
Whereas HLI is about the activity. It covers the hunters, or the hunt club, and the landowner for claims made specifically as a result of hunting activities. The key trigger for HLI is that the hunters have paid or bartered or compensated the landowner in some way for exclusive access.
That financial transaction is what changes the whole game. It's the difference between insuring a field because someone might trip over a root and insuring that same field because someone is actively setting up complicated equipment while carrying a loaded rifle.
So, bringing it all the way back to our main question,
yeah.
We can definitively confirm for you, no. You do not have to allow hunting or any other activity you don't want on your land to purchase vacant land insurance.
That is the essential takeaway. If you own that vacant land, if you're just allowing occasional recreational access or maybe no access at all, the vacant land policy is the correct, necessary choice. It's for guarding against claims made by anyone, anyone at all who steps foot on that land, invited guest or trespasser.
It protects the landowner from the seemingly endless number of scenarios where a person might get hurt or cause damage just because they are physically present on your acreage.
Yeah.
It is an essential part of ownership, whether you ever see a deer stand on your property or not.
You're safeguarding your overall assets against risks that exist just because you own the ground and are therefore responsible for what happens on it. You should never assume that vacant means zero risk.
In fact, the opposite can be true.
It can. Often the lack of structures or active maintenance is what creates the liability.
Which brings us to our final provocative thought for you, the now well-informed landowner. Once you figure out the correct policy type you need, VLI for passive risk or HLI for commercial risk, the research we reviewed stresses the importance of one final act of due diligence.
That act is vetting the underwriter. The policy is only as good as the company that's backing it up.
Right.
Landowners have to ensure they use a reputable company with a proven, specific track record in the land liability industry. You should look for organizations that really understand premises liability and the nuances of rural land management, because a generic policy written by a generalized company might just leave critical loopholes wide open.
Understanding the policy is step one. Choosing the right partner is step two. That level of detail is critical for ensuring your deep dive into land ownership doesn't end with an unexpected financial disaster. Now you know the rules of the road.